I grabbed Professional Cooking for Canadian Chefs 9th edition.
What for?
Because there was a few episodes back where we were talking about the word stodgy.
Yeah.
And I think, I can't remember how it played out, but...
Oh, I remember how it played out.
Welcome to Food Court. I'm Shale McDonald, and I'm here with my co-host, Alan Sutterby. We're two chefs from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. We love food, and we love to talk about it. So let's dive right in.
My recollection is that you were trying to call me out for misusing it.
Yes, exactly.
And I, like, immediately after that conversation, I searched it on, like, I searched define stodgy. And the first one that comes up is dull and uninspired. But the second definition that comes up, it says that it's British English, and it says of food, heavy, filling, and high in carbohydrates. And then I was like, oh, I must have learned, like, if it's from British vernacular, I must have, like, heard Jamie Oliver say it or something.
Right.
But then I was reading from Professional Cooking for Canadian Chefs 9th edition last night.
Why were you reading that? Is it a textbook for work?
It's the text that, yeah, it's the text that's used at Nate, and was, like, an earlier edition was used when I was there, and it's still used now. And in their description of the nouvelle cuisine of the 1970s, it says, reacting to what they saw as a heavy, stodgy, overly complicated classical cuisine, these chefs took Poin's lighter approach, ..
Okay, Alan, okay, I take it back. I promise. I will not, no longer will Shale question your vernacular.
Although, no, you should sometimes, because there was another word in the, when we were talking about guilty pleasures that I totally misused, and that's depraved. I described.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. My sucking the Donair sauce out of the bag,
yeah.
I described as depraved.
Oh, I thought that was a perfect description of it.
Yeah. I thought that depraved just meant base. But it actually means something closer to evil.
Right.
And I don't think doing that is
insane.
Evil. Yeah, like immoral or wicked. So that
there. Well, to be fair, I mean, you were talking about, you know, like you were relating it to eating ortolans.
Yeah.
Which is definitely viewed as being like evil or something,
yeah.
Because, you know, that's why people have to cover their head when they do it, so
yeah.
That God can't see them. So
right.
I think maybe depraved applies.
Okay.
In that way. Anyway, if you don't want to label yourself as being depraved, I understand why.
I just feel like I'm between a rock and a hard place, because I have to choose between either being right about the meaning of the word, but then being wicked.
But then having described yourself as
yeah,
it.
Yeah, exactly. Or misusing the word, but then not being wicked and immoral. But I am very proud of my diction, though, so I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what you need to do in this situation, Alan. I don't want to say self-aware, because obviously you're not a depraved person, but to label that particular behavior as depraved, I thought was inspired at the time. So.
Okay. Oh,
I don't think you need to take on the mantle of being depraved in order to describe that particular yeah. behavior.
And actually, speaking of follow-up, mm-hmm. I watched one of the food movies that you had mentioned that I hadn't seen when we were actually talking about food movies.
Oh, which one?
Burnt.
Oh, cool. How did you like it?
I liked it.
Yeah, it's okay, right?
Yeah, like it played into a lot of familiar tropes, especially if you've read, like, or if you know anything about Marco Pierre White or read Devil in the Kitchen or White Heat. Well, or sorry, not if you, it doesn't come across in White Heat, but in his memoir, Devil in the Kitchen. So a lot of that, attitude and those kinds of confrontations in the kitchen.
Yeah.
I did like it, though. And to be honest, like I've never been in a in a Michelin-starred kitchen. Like, I've only been in the dining room, so I can't say how accurate it is or anything. But yeah, it was entertaining. I liked it.
Yeah. Do you remember anything that I said about it plot-wise? I'm just trying to remember what I said, because I feel like when I was talking about it, I didn't really remember the plot very well.
I don't clearly remember what you said. But yeah, the basic premise was that it says it on the back of the DVD case, and I'm sure like every film critic who reviewed it got to use the same phrase. He was the enfant terrible of the Parisian restaurant scene.
Oh, yeah.
So just like a bad boy. And got to the point where his substance abuse and debts and womanizing kind of drove him out of town. And then he does this kind of penance, or his self-described penance in New Orleans, shucking
the oysters. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I kind of forgot about that. I couldn't remember what was going on. I thought maybe he'd gone to prison, or he just like went back to his hometown or something. But yeah, the oysters. Yeah, that was kind of cool.
Yeah. And then he goes to London, where he has contacts and makes it his mission to obtain 3 Michelin stars.
Right. And nobody's going to spoil it.
You mean within the context of the movie, no one's going to spoil his mission? Or
no,
do you
I mean
that...
we're not going to say what happens at the end of the movie.
Okay.
Maybe he gets the stars. Maybe he doesn't.
Yeah.
Maybe it's all okay because no, I'm not going to say anything.
He wakes up and it's all a dream.
That would be so good. Yeah. How was your week, Alan? Did you do any fun cooking this week?
At home, I made agnolotti. You know those?
Mm-hmm. It's like I love agnolotti. It's like the easiest stuffed pasta to make, too, basically.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah, easy. Like, it's easy, but it's also efficient. Like, it's time efficient. It's way easier to shape 100 of them.
Yeah, yeah. I guess that's what I mean. Easy isn't the right word, but yeah, it's super efficient to make them because, yeah, it's like...
And I find that the, like if you just follow the standard method, like you get such a great crimp on them. Like they just seem, they seal much more consistently and easier than more finicky things like tortelloni or something like that.
Yeah.
I've been.
What kind?
I filled them with squash and apple puree.
Nice.
And just had them in brown butter and sage.
Your kids eat that?
This one wasn't for them, but I froze some, so I'll try them.
Sweet.
I'll see if the kids like them. Yeah.
What did I cook this week? Yeah. Not too much. I'm cooking with one arm.
Right.
Yeah. I hurt my arm at work a couple weeks ago, and I've been off work. I had to get surgery to reattach my biceps tendon. Mm-hmm. So I haven't been doing a ton of cooking. But I've been doing normal stuff, a lot of grilling. I just, as soon as it's grill, like as soon as I can stand to be outside, standing in front of my grill, I just start pretty much grilling everything.
Yeah.
I don't like to heat up the appliances in the house too much mm-hmm. once the weather gets nice. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I grill the vegetables, I grill the proteins, I grilled some salmon this week, and we always have asparagus. Just in case we want to eat some. So I grilled some asparagus, those types of things.
Cool.
Pretty simple stuff. Also, something else that I want to talk about at some point is that a couple times now, I think 3 times, my sister and I have gotten HelloFresh.
Oh, yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah. And that's actually been, I mean, there's good and bad. We've had good and bad meals from there, and mm-hmm. There's like good and bad things about it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I definitely like to talk about it at some point.
Cool. Well, yeah, like I mentioned, we have we got a very enticing coupon in the mail, and we haven't used it yet. But our intention is to try it out. So.
Well, once you do, then we should
compare notes,
talk about it.
Yeah,
yeah. Just like right off the bat, like for me, it's kind of good because you don't have to follow the instructions. It's nice for my sister because she wants to have the instructions to follow. Mm-hmm. And it's nice for me because basically everything is ready to go. You just have to put it together and heat things up. Mm-hmm. And so I can choose to like cook the proteins however I want.
Right.
And, you know, so it's, Yeah.
Just the fun stuff is left. The mise en place is done, and now you just get to the fun part.
Basically, except they always send you a whole onion, and then you have to cut an onion. So you always have to cry every time you make
it. Oh, that's funny. I thought that the allure of it was that then all the knife work was already done.
Not all of the knife work is already done. Sometimes things are already cut up, and sometimes they're not. It depends on what the ingredient is and what the recipe is. And I think that I don't want to get too into the weeds with it here, but I think part of the idea is like the amount of prep time. Mm-hmm. So they're not trying to make it so that it takes no prep time. So if like it's relatively easy to prep everything else for it, then I think maybe sometimes they'll make you cut the onion.
Okay.
But if everything else is kind of like, you know, if the assembly takes longer than for some other meal, then maybe they have the onions cut up already or something like that.
Or maybe they don't want to ship chopped onions because it gets so stinky.
I have gotten chopped onions before, though. Yeah. So I'm not really sure what the, how they decide what, you know, what's going to be in the recipe, but I think it might have something to do with the prep time. Mm-hmm. Like, And it tells you when you go to pick the things that you want to order, it tell you know, like it gives you an estimated prep time for everything. And they have like a certain selection of things that are like quick dinners that I think are supposed to take you like under 20 minutes from the time you open the bag to the time you have a meal in the.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know. But anyways, generally, if you like season things properly, those meals turn out to be pretty tasty most of the time. Except, man, they have a lot of chicken breast selections. They love giving you chicken breasts.
Yeah.
I think we've only seen one meal that had chicken thighs.
Oh, is that
right? As opposed to breasts. Yeah.
That's what people want.
Well, yeah, I know. Exactly. It's not necessarily what I want, though. And then if I did want it, I would want to open up the chicken the day before and brine it.
Right.
But haven't done that yet. I might next time we order. Yeah, next time we order something with chicken breast in it, I might, with the day that we get it, I might just pop it open and season it right away. Yeah. Well, welcome to Food Court.
And what are we talking about tonight?
Well, that's a great question, Alan. I don't know if we should have just dove right in, because I guess we were a little sort of up in the air about the topics, but I think what we're talking about is a couple of hidden gems.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've already sort of gotten onto the topic of steel wheels before, and I know that you have more to say about steel wheels.
Yeah, that's right.
And so I think we're definitely going to talk about that. And then I also really want to talk about Shanghai 456, which is a restaurant that I thought that I sort of understood conceptually until I started trying to do a little bit of research on it before tonight's show. So we'll see how that goes. But either way, it's an amazing restaurant, and they have delicious food. And I'm excited to talk about it one way or the other.
Cool.
So I don't know. Where should we start? I mean, we've both been to 456, so...
Yeah,
should
I think
we start
I only
with 456.
Sure. I believe I only went twice.
Okay.
Possibly both times with you. Certainly the first time was with you.
Okay.
So I want you to lead. you have to lead the way on this one.
Yeah, no worries. I'm happy to lead the way. So Shanghai 456 is like, I don't know. Maybe it's more popular now than it used to be, or maybe it's more well known now than it used to be. But the first time that I went there, it was like truly a hidden gem, just in the weirdest location.
Yeah.
And at the time, eating out was sort of like a contact sport for me. Like, it was like, you know, I ate a lot, and I sort of like prided myself on having tried like tons of restaurants in the city,
right,
and knowing like, you know, what the, you know, best three pho places are in the city, and what the best three Korean places are in the city, and you know, like, and just like really sort of having a handle on you know, the Edmonton restaurant scene.
Your finger on the pulse.
Right. Finger on the pulse. Yeah. Felt like homework or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
I had never heard of the place and no one had ever talked to me about it. But at one point I was doing some research about Xiaolongbao, otherwise known as XLB, soup dumplings. I can't remember why I got onto it. I think I watched an episode of some cooking show or some food show where they went to a place in Vancouver that had Xiaolongbao.
Okay, yep.
And and the chef showed how to make them, and I was like, oh. And I think that I had had them a couple times when I was in Vancouver without really realizing what was going on with them.
Mm-hmm.
So I sort of like remembered that. And then I kind of was doing some research because I thought maybe I was going to make some. And then I was like, oh, well, I wonder if there are any restaurants in Edmonton that make them.
Right.
And it turns out that there are maybe two. I don't know. Maybe there's more now.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, which when was that? I guess it was 2012 or something like that. Does that make sense? 2012, 2013, something like that.
Like when I would have gone with you?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, so in my research, I found out that there was this restaurant, Shanghai 456, and that it was located in what used to be the cafeteria for the Edmonton Flying Club.
Mm-hmm. At the municipal airport, yeah.
Yeah, at the municipal airport, which had been shut down. It was already shut down at that point, right? The municipal airport, except maybe there was like helicopter pads there
At that time, I mean, we might have to do research, but at that time, I'm quite confident that it was still in operation. And perhaps there were plans for the Blatchford developments and everything, but it was still in operation because I had actually attended classes at the Edmonton Flying Club just two years before that, or a few years before that, but...
So was the Edmonton Flying Club still open at that time? Like the Flying Club itself, obviously not the cafeteria, but...
As far as I know, yeah.
Huh, okay. Yeah, well, I didn't know that. And I guess because I was going there in the evening and the rest of the building was just like totally dark and you had to walk down a dark hallway until...
Yeah.
Although I think I did go there for lunch one time.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But yeah, anyways, it was in the cafeteria for the Edmonton Flying Club. And the restaurant wasn't like they hadn't really redecorated much at all. Like it was still basically set up like a cafeteria, except it was table service.
Mm-hmm.
There was one server who spoke pretty good English and had a pretty good grasp on what the menu items were and what the menu items were called. So it was pretty easy for us to go in and order, but I don't think anyone else who worked there really spoke much English. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was just like, not every dish on their menu was something completely new to me or anything like that, but it turns out that, the people who were cooking there were just like really, I think, trying to do something super authentic.
Mm-hmm.
Really trying to make the dishes the same way that they had been making them, I'm assuming, in Shanghai.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I don't know, at the time, I think that I thought what the cuisine that they were preparing would be like categorized as would have been Szechuan. And I definitely know that that some of the dishes that they had on the menu are also dishes that I've seen on Szechuan menus.
Okay.
But I was talking about this with you a little bit earlier. I was doing a little bit of research about it tonight, and it looks like Shanghai cuisine is like its completely own thing. And I think, that's what they say that their food is. So.
Mm-hmm. Even in the name.
It's right in the name, stupid shale. And I think, I don't know. It's funny because, here's a really weird bit of trivia about it. I can't remember, but I think that the address, the reason why it was called 456 is because the address at the Flying Club was
456 Airport
456.
Road.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So after that building was shut down, I guess after the Edmonton Flying Club was shut down, they shut down the building and the restaurant had to move.
Mm-hmm.
So they moved to another location. It's on 118th Ave. Alan, guess what their new address is?
11845. Oh, no, that's not how addresses work in Edmonton. 11856. Sorry, 118th Avenue and 45th Street or something like that. That doesn't sound like a place that they wouldn't be in Beverly, would they?
The new address is 14456 118th Ave.
So did they?
They must have looked for a location that had 456 in the address, and then accepted it based on the numbers in the address. Which just like I just found this out tonight, and honestly, it blew my mind. I was like, "No, wait! I'm pretty sure they named it for the address at the last location.
They did, yeah.
So how did? Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. It's a different story now. There's a lot of commercial real estate on the market in Edmonton right now. But when they moved, that wouldn't have been the case. And I can't imagine how many of them would have had 456 in the address.
Yeah, exactly. So did they look at did they look at every avenue in the city and look for like things between 144th and 100? Like I just
or it's man. Just kismet. It's just like
pure luck. Yeah. The other thing that I was wondering is if that means something numerologically, but
oh. I have no idea.
Me neither. Anyway, so I was looking for Xiaolongbao. I found this restaurant that apparently was serving really good Xiaolongbao. Mm. I went there. I don't know if the first time I went there was with you. I'm not sure.
My recollection, you were my guide, so I think you had been there.
So I was like shepherding. Yeah, because I think the first time I went there, I went with Clayton. Mm-hmm. And maybe my sister came with me too. And I definitely have a picture of that, of the three of us there. Mm-hmm. So I also have a real, when we went there, we ordered probably 75% of the entire menu. I think, but like we ordered so many dumplings and I ate so many dumplings. And every time I go to that place, I eat so many dumplings, which I can't really do anymore, which is sort of sad.
Right.
I have to limit my dumpling intake now.
You should tell us what those dumplings are for those who don't know.
Right. So Xiaolongbao are dumplings that have usually some kind of meat component in them, be it like pork, beef, or seafood. And then they also contain inside the little dumpling, like broth, like hot broth. And so when you eat them, you have to sort of like bite a little corner and then try to slurp the hot broth out without burning your mouth on it. And it's usually really rich and flavorful,
like a glaçage, like a really concentrated stock, right? Like.
Yeah, like not like demi-glace or anything, but like, yeah, really well-fortified consommé or something. Mm.
And so in English, commonly called soup dumplings, is that the most common kind of? Yeah.
Yeah, definitely in English. Most people refer to them as soup dumplings.
Which is?
And they have a few different kinds. Mm-hmm. Pork, crab, beef, and then they had a bunch of other kinds of dumplings too that were like larger, sort of more like bigger, more like a pork bun style dumpling, but that also had broth in them. And then they had some pork bun style fried dumplings that they only had on Saturdays or something like that, that were just amazing. When I think about that place, I mostly think about dumplings, but then they also had like all these other things that I tried for the first time when I was there. So they had like I think like the English name for it is rice stick. But it's like thick rice noodles that are like sliced on a bias, so you get these kind of like wedge-shaped kind of rice noodles, and then they're usually in some kind of like fermented bean sauce or something like that.
And really chewy, right?
Yeah, really chewy.
Like the same style that you see at some Korean restaurants?
Yes.
Like at Nongbu they have? Yeah, okay.
They had a green bean dish with XO, like fried green beans with XO. And XO sauce is like this really sort of, how would you describe it? It's kind of like a chili oil, but it's got like tons of crispy bits in it.
Yeah.
And the crispy bits are like garlic and then usually dried seafood. Yeah, so dried I think there's usually dried smoked scallops and maybe dried shrimp and just like, and I'm pretty sure there's usually mushrooms in it. I think basically anything that you can find that has any sort of umami value, they just like cook it down in oil until it's just like all the like brownest, crispiest little bits of umami. And then that's what they use to flavor the green bean dish. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. So amazing. I'm getting hungry thinking about it. I haven't been in a while, a couple of years actually. They also had this like, I forget what it's called. Oh man, there's a couple things. Okay, so they have this turnip pastry.
Okay.
And it's like stuffed with cooked turnip, but it's like a flaky pastry on the outside. Mm-hmm. That was amazing. They had, I can't remember. I was going to try and look at the menu before we started talking about it. And then I looked to see the menu and they don't actually have it posted right now. So I'm kind of flying by the seat of my pants, but they have this thing. It's called fried baguette or something. And it's like basically a donut. And then they served it a couple different ways. They had a sweet one for dessert. And then I think they also had like a savory preparation with it, but it's basically like, I guess like the closest thing would be like an eclair.
Okay.
I think it's pretty close to like choux paste. It's like it's fried and then it's mostly hollow in the middle. And I think they have a few preparations that they use that with. And yeah, that one kind of flipped my lid a little bit.
I wonder, we're just, we're over our heads. But like there's, like I've seen something called a Chinese donut served with congee. Like one of the garnishes for congee.
I'll bet it's very similar. I think actually maybe one of the names for it on the menu was like donut, something donut.
But it looked like, it was tubular. It was like a long cylindrical donut that was largely hollow.
Yeah. This is that to a T. Kate. Yeah. So anyways, and then you're eating in what used to be the cafeteria, I guess, for the flying club. I never went there when it was a flying club cafeteria, but all of the plateware, all the dinnerware and everything was served on platters that said Edmonton Flying Club on them.
EFC everywhere. EFC, and it was a pretty, if I remember, it was kind of a dumpy room. Eh? It was like fluorescent strip lighting and old tables and old padded chairs and...
Yeah. Everything was just like the old furniture from the flying club. And they didn't take out any of like the, because when it was a cafeteria, they had those like stainless steel countertops with like, you know, like a little shelf out front with the little rails in it. So you can put your cafeteria tray down on the rails and then you can go through and ask for like a chocolate milk and a bowl of soup and whatever else you get in a egg salad sandwich.
Yeah.
And then you go sit down and... Eat your cafeteria food before you go out and do, what do you do in an airplane, Alan? Donuts? I don't know.
Oh, food reference. Good job.
Thanks.
It does. Yeah, it fit the, if there were anything to be described as a hidden gem, it would be that location because my memory is that the only signage that they had was a neon 456. Like it didn't say Shanghai anywhere. It didn't say soup dumplings this way. It was literally just a kind of, or not even neon, but it was like strip lighting that was bent into the numbers the shape of 456.
And that was on the outside door when you like came up to the front of the EFC building. Mm-hmm. And then you had to go in through that door. And then like, there was no signage inside, I don't think. You just sort of had to like, follow this weird hallway and go the right direction to get down the hallway to like you could kind of hear that there was a restaurant like down the hallway but there was no like additional signage to say that the restaurant is over here or I guess they just expected that everyone had been to the flying club before but I don't think that anything in that room had changed since like the 80s or the 70s even maybe like the furniture was really old restaurant furniture and I'm actually surprised at how much like plateware they still had. I'm like the stuff maybe was, I don't know, sitting there wrapped up for years before somebody took that space over or something. I don't know.
It could be. It was a cool, like it. Yeah, it was like heavy ceramics. Very vintage. The kind of stuff you would see at a thrift shop now. It was cool.
Yeah, was cool, Alan.
Yeah.
There's like a punchline to this story, and that is that at their new location,
yeah,
they still have the plateware from the Edmonton Flying Club.
Is that right?
Yeah, you can try and pretend like I didn't just tell you that 10 minutes ago, Alan, but it's not going to work. People know. But yeah, it's insane. Like, the only picture that I have from their new location is I was so shocked to see that they still had the Edmonton Flying Club plateware.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that I took a picture of. So, which I don't know. Maybe we can post that on the Instagram. But like, that's the only 4, 5, 6 picture that I have.
And that, so I wonder, is that like, that was stipulated in their lease that when they go, the plates go with them?
Or? They are allowed to take the plateware with them, or they just sneakily took the plateware. They're like, do we have plates for the new place? I don't know. Yeah, it's a great question. I'm positive that whoever was shutting down the Edmonton Flying Club building, the more stuff that got taken out of there, the better. You know, the more stuff just didn't have to get taken away in the back of a dump truck.
As is often the case when you're moving or closing a business or, yeah.
Like, they were probably doing whoever was closing down that building a favor by taking the plateware.
And that would be, like, no joke, that would be advice that I would give to someone going off to college or university. I would say, like, if you have roommates and you're moving out, make sure you're not the last one in the house. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah,
like,
no
if
kidding.
The last day.
You're going to be left with everyone's garbage.
Yeah, you're going to, like, everyone's going to be like, okay, great, you know, memories, okay, take it easy. And then you're going to be left alone in the house and you're going to like open the fridge and realize that it's completely full of food and open a closet and realize that there's all kinds of junk in there that needs to get rid of.
Yeah, exactly. The fridge is going to be full of condiments.
Highly perishable condiments. Yep. Okay. I'm scared to ask this, but so the soup dumplings, the way that they make them, is it to like make their really concentrated stock and then to chill it and cube it and then when it's in its solid form, pop it and like shape the dumplings?
Yeah, that's right. From what I've seen, and like specifically on that one episode of a show that I watched, I wish I could remember which show it was. Anyway.
Does that mean?
Yeah.
Like
they make like a dumpling mix, like you would put in like a normal, like, I mean, not the same mix that would go into like a gyoza, but something like that, you know, like, so if it's like a pork one, then it's like ground pork or chopped pork and then probably some onion and some green onion and some garlic and probably, you know, seasoned with salt, pepper, MSG, you know, a little extra fat maybe mixed in or something. Like that would be like a normal sort of like pork dumpling mix. So there's like a small amount of that, a little ball of that or a little cube of that. And then, yeah, they just they make like really fortified stock and then they cut it into little cubes. And then they just take like a little spoonful of the cubes of fortified stock and then a little spoonful of the dumpling mix and they just put them together in a dumpling wrapper and just tie the top off.
So does that mean... like to me, to execute that well, like you need good refrigeration. Does that mean that it's a relatively modern dish or like, sorry,
I don't know. That's a good question. I think, I don't know. I don't really know enough about the lineage of most Chinese cuisines to know what things are modern and what things aren't,
Me too.
You know?
Yeah.
It seems to me like it might kind of be an urban thing.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
You know, more of like a city folk type of dish and less of a, you know, like peasant dish or country folk type of dish. But that's, you know, honestly, I don't really, that's just my intuition speaking. I don't really have any evidence about it.
I'm going to look into that.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be good to know. I'm not entirely sure. But I think like for one thing, the stock is so fortified. I mean, I'm sure it's much easier to pull off when you have everything really well refrigerated.
But it might just be solid at room temperature.
I'll bet that the stock is so fortified that it would probably be pretty much solid at room temperature. Yeah. And I think it's solid, like, for the most part, even before they cook them. It's like only when they get them really hot that it right. turns liquid again.
Yeah.
So the dumpling skins are always like, or at least in the good ones that I've had, the dumpling skins for Xiaolongbao are also always really pretty delicate, mm-hmm. pretty thin. Mm-hmm. And that really adds to it because, you know, you have this like super delicate little like breakable dumpling and it's just like full of this amazingly delicious hot liquid. It's just, it seems like yeah. magic food. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. And also the kind of thing that, well, we described you as my guide or shepherd the first time. And it's right. absolutely the kind of, not just because it was a hidden gem that you wouldn't know it was there. But yeah, just the way to, just eating it safely and.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You need a little help if you don't have any, well, I mean like don't not eat Xiaolongbao because you're scared. You're going to burn yourself.
No.
But you could. So
I just mean that if you didn't know what it was and you assumed that it was a regular dumpling and ate it, you would at the very least stain your clothes.
Yeah.
If not scald your
face. You'd yeah. be very surprised.
Yeah.
And there's a potential for you to have burned yourself badly. Yeah. There's a lot of XLB technique videos on YouTube.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah, I watched
for eating.
Yeah, I watched a yeah eating. I watched a lot of people eating a lot of Xiaolongbao when I was obsessed with them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so 456, super hidden gem. If you haven't gone there, I really recommend that you try it out. Mm-hmm. Might not be a bad idea to call ahead. They have special days that they have special dishes on. I think when they were at the Edmonton Flying Club, it was Saturdays that they had like a special menu mm-hmm. where they had like three different types of dumplings that they didn't make for the rest of the week.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
So Saturdays or Sundays or something like that. And I think I went for that day once and yeah, it was worth it. So it's kind of worth a call ahead.
When, okay, tangent. When you started to say better call ahead before you go, I thought you were going to say because they keep your regular hours or they don't follow their posted hours or something, which is not what you said. But are you familiar with the Is Taobei Open website and hashtag?
No, but okay. That sounds amazing.
So Taobei is probably, you mentioned that it was a point of pride for you to know, for instance, the top three pho places in the city.
And yeah, definitely Taobei is in my top three pho places. Okay. Yeah.
But, and I haven't been there in quite a while, but they used to be...
King Noodle is my number one.
Is that true? Okay.
But I know there's some contention around yeah. that. So, but for another me episode. Personally, King Noodle, 100% number one top pho place in Edmonton.
A while back, Taobei was notorious in the food community for, like I said, for keeping irregular hours and not following their posted hours. Mm-hmm. And so there was actually, I think it's still up. There's a website called Is Taobei Open? And people, and there was also, I don't know if it was a Twitter feed or if just hashtags, Taobei is open and Taobei is closed. But they had people, like if you were walking by Taobei and you noticed that they were open or closed, you would just like post it and it was aggregated on this site so that people who needed noodle fixes would like look at the site before they looked at the Google hours and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's genius. Yeah, this website is still up.
Yeah.
I don't know how accurate it is.
How often it's updated?
They have Taobei's posted hours on here. Okay. Though. And actually, like, I haven't had too bad of luck. I used to go to Taobei, like, you know, a fair amount. Mm-hmm. And there was only certain times that I really could go. Mm-hmm. But I usually, when I would go... When I knew what their posted hours were, I don't think I ever ran into a problem where they weren't open when they were
right.
posted to be open. Right. But yeah, this says that they're open from 10:30 in the morning until 6:30 p.m. most days, and then till 8:30 on Friday and Saturday, closed on Sunday. Mm-hmm. 10:30 in the morning? I don't know, man. I'll bet that sometimes they're not open till 11.
Okay, tangent concluded. The so my
yeah. What about your experience at 456, Alan? Let's Let's hear it.
Oh, well, like I said, I only went maybe twice. And yeah, the first time is almost surreal, like to find yourself in that part of the city at that time of, well, yeah, in that part of the city, I mean, the municipal airport at that time of night, and it being more or less deserted. I don't remember there being very many diners in the dining room with us, but it was a while
ago. Right. Yeah. I think a couple times I went, it was pretty busy. And then a couple times I went and there was like nobody in there.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was a very memorable experience. Sorry for that reason, but also, yeah, that was the first time I had heard of or tasted those dumplings. And yeah, they were unlike any, like they're like an inside out bowl of soup. And really delicious, I found them extremely difficult to eat. but that's, you know, practice, right?
Yeah. It takes a little practice. Yeah.
And the only other thing I remember eating was green onion cakes.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like
we ordered green onion cakes. That's interesting. Yeah. I don't ever remember ordering that, but we didn't order that turnip pastry. Oh my God. I led you astray, Alan.
Not that I remember, but I didn't take notes that night.
I was pretty down with that turnip pastry. I love the Xiaolongbao, and I would definitely, if I went back, that would be like, you know, the thing that I would probably focus on ordering. But man, I really sure hope they still have that turnip pastry. Mm-hmm. So good. And so, yeah, and then they're in their new location. I've been there a couple of times, and the food is as good as it was at the other location, except it's way more busy at the new location.
That makes sense.
Which is great for them. And I'm 99% sure that they're still open. COVID be damned.
And it's probably a more polished atmosphere.
Yeah, quite a bit. Mm-hmm. Like it's quite a bit nicer. It still like has this kind of, it still definitely has some like retro charm. Mm-hmm. And then it's like some of it is like overly chromed, I think is like the best way to put it. Yeah, like I think
like a 50s diner.
The chairs are gold chromed and like, I don't know. It's like, yeah, it's like fancy in that way, you know?
Cool.
Anyway. Got to go back soon, but not before I go to Steel Wheels.
Well, speaking of an atmosphere that's fancy. okay, so my hidden gem is Steel Wheels, but...
I mean, it's not, I guess, I kind of did you a disservice by calling this segment hidden gems, because mine was definitely a hidden gem. Yours is much less a hidden gem,
There's a hidden gem component to it.
Right, right, yeah.
But I wanted, because it came up in our episode, the last episode, The Real Guilty Pleasures, right?
Yeah, that's right.
As a late night place that I used to frequent, that wasn't, anyways. So I thought, I wanted to talk about it again in more depth, partly because I didn't get the chance to really paint all of the proper color in and describe the place. But also because there's a great kind of hidden, or secondary component to the menu that, really changed my idea of the place and how me and my friends ate there. So Steel Wheels, this is going to be really excruciating for most of the people who listen because they live in Edmonton and already know what White Avenue is and what Steel Wheels is, but let's pretend
paint a picture.
Like let's pretend that a few people from outside of Edmonton.
I happen to know, Alan, that I happen to know that we have at least one listener in the UK.
Oh, okay.
At least one listener in France, and at least two listeners in Vancouver who may not be as aware of the Edmonton hidden gem / late night drinking scene.
I'll bet you $100 that all four of those people are Edmonton expats. But
actually I know for sure that one of them is not.
Okay.
So
okay. So South Edmonton, White Avenue is a strip full of bars and pubs and restaurants and nightclubs.
And sounds amazing,
Alan. It's but it's like the reputation is for, it's like a sloppy, drunken 20-year-old kind of scene, I would say. Like it's by the university. So it's not like, I don't think it's not the cool hipster strip. It's the, a little bit, am I misrepresenting it? It's kind of the,
no,
the,
I have to agree with you.
Okay.
There.
The grungier,
at some point,
sloppier, frat kid. I don't know that kind of vibe. Okay. And I'm just going to say it once that everything I'm talking about is before COVID. Like I haven't been out during COVID and you haven't
left your house once.
Exactly. I certainly haven't been to Steel Wheels. I haven't, but so everything that I'm saying is pre-COVID, and I'll just say that once and never again. So on White Avenue, Friday and Saturday nights, there would just be shoulder to shoulder, drunken 20-year-olds, waiting in line for donairs and nightclubs and whatever else. But you go just two blocks north of White Avenue, and all of a sudden the streets are a lot darker, and there's a lot less foot traffic. But you can find this place called Steel Wheels. Steel Wheels Pizzeria, I think, is the official name. And it's called Steel Wheels because, like many, many parts of Canada, in this neighborhood, the history of the railroad kind of plays an important part. And so it's by an old railroad. It used to be the end, the terminus of a railroad that took you to Edmonton. To Strathcona, actually. But anyways, the vast majority of the times that I ate there, it was well after midnight. This was an earlier part of my life, Shale, but I definitely found myself on White Avenue twice a week for years and years, once to throw darts on Tuesdays and once to go out on the weekends.
Where did you throw darts?
We could do a whole episode on
that. Not just one place.
For years and years, it was Avenue Pizza on 112th Street. And then and then sometimes at Black Dog. But once Avenue closed, we would often find ourselves at the Buckingham or its predecessors, which I can't even recall the names of now, but that location.
Gotcha. And every good Canadian knows that smoking darts is actually a euphemism for, or throwing darts is a euphemism for smoking cigarettes. Is that right, Alan? You were smoking cigarettes?
I was, but you don't say that you're throwing a dart, do you? When you just say like, I'm having a dart, no, like I'm going out for a dart. Okay, good.
Yeah, I really derailed everything. Okay. Sorry. Go on.
So, Steel Wheels after midnight on a weekend, on a Friday, Saturday, there would certainly be a lineup out the door. So you wait in line, you get into the door, and the first thing that you notice is that it is, I hate to say this because I love the place, but it's really one of the filthiest and most squalid restaurants that I've ever eaten at, certainly in Canada. Every inch of every surface has graffiti on it, like in done in whiteout and Sharpie marker and paint and anything you can imagine. The tables, the booths, the walls, graffiti everywhere. There's like styrofoam plates with drawings on them taped all over the walls. And generally, like, not that the operators aren't doing their due diligence, but like through the course of an evening where you're primarily serving drunks, the place is filthy. Like food is being thrown and this
dropped on the floor.
Yeah, and it's all served on disposable, like on styrofoam and disposable. So it was a filthy place.
What do you think it looks like after they clean it up at the end of the night?
Well, it just crossed my mind. Maybe they wash away the graffiti every night and then it gets put back up over the course of the next evening. I never thought about that.
I'm sure that's how it works.
Anyways, so for a long time, I would go there and we would just go because it was a pizza place that was open very late. And again, I hate to say this, but they had the reputation for serving after last call. And I don't know, right. I don't want to slander anyone, but like there were at least two times where I went there where their liquor license had been taken away for some kind of violation.
So they're licensed and they serve beer?
Yeah, that's right. They serve beer, and we'll talk about this later, but they also have some spirits available. So we would go, it was a place to like have our last few beers, have some pizza, and kind of, it was usually our cap to the evening.
Right.
And then we found out that they have, the years that I was going there, the man behind the counter, the owner, his name was Phil, and he's Korean. And he was behind the counter with his wife, and just like the friendliest guy you can imagine, liked talking to you. He would just like scream out the orders all the time when your pizza was ready. He likes to joke, and like a really
Did you talk to him much? Like, do you know anything about him? Do you know where he's from, or
they've
been in Edmonton?
Korea. I talked to him lots, but it was usually just joking around, and I wouldn't say that I got to know him, and it's not like he would know.
Right.
He certainly would not know who I am if he saw me in the street. There was a rumor, though, amongst the regulars that in Korea he was a professional ball player.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Some good ball players in Korea.
I can't confirm or deny that, and I honestly don't remember if I would have asked him about that or if he had told me or what, but
Man, rumors are the best.
I also thought it would be, if there was someone who was kind of tapped into that scene, an amazing like collector's acquisition would be if he was actually a baseball player to find his card. Do you know what I mean? I feel like that would be, and maybe it's not even true and I'm just telling tales out of school, but if that baseball card exists, that is like one of the most valuable Edmonton
artifacts. Okay, if anyone his name's Phil.
Yeah.
If anyone knows Phil and can corroborate this rumor, I'd very much be interested to find out if it's true and whether we can find his baseball card.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, Phil is Korean, and somehow it after probably years of just having beer and pepperoni pizza there, someone someone found out that you can get bulgogi pizza, so you can get marinated Korean beef on the pizzas. And we dug that, so we got that a lot. But then
what else is on the pizza? It's not still tomato sauce, is it?
Is still tomato sauce. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So it's just tomato sauce, bulgogi beef, like mozzarella.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, but one night we were sitting in a booth, and there was, some Korean students in the booth across the aisle from us, and we're eating our pizza on our styrofoam plates. And one of them comes to the table, and he has a cafeteria tray. I'm going to preface this by saying that this was well before I was cooking and before I knew anything about food generally, let alone Korean food. Okay.
Fair.
Cafeteria tray on which is a stoneware bowl with this bright red soup in it. And the soup is at a rolling boil. It's on a cafeteria tray in a stone bowl, and it's at a rolling boil.
Like, is the tray fiberglass? Is that?
It's like a cafeteria tray. Like,
but like, there's two kinds. There's like the plastic ones that you get at fast food restaurants, and then there's like the fiberglass ones that you get in actual like old school cafeterias. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I think so. I would guess that it's just plastic. So obviously there's some kind of underlay.
Okay.
Like something between the bowl and the tray. But
to keep it from melting.
Yeah,
through
exactly.
The tray.
Yes. But this blew my mind. Like I couldn't fathom how a soup was boiling. Like I actually wondered if there was electricity involved and like all this.
Yeah.
And if you can picture three or four drunk white kids with mouths full of pizza, just like slack jawed, looking at the food across the aisle.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's this bright red boiling soup, plates of rice, little dumplings, to me looked like gyoza. Obviously that's Japanese. I didn't know anything about anything.
Yeah.
And not only that, they have this green bottle in the center of the table and they're doing shots out of it. And it was too much. It was too much. So I just had to like embarrass myself and like lean over their table and be like, what is it? Tell me all about this. And they gave me the bare minimum amount of information that they needed to make me go away.
Go away.
Which I, and so I don't know if I'm remembering it 100% right, but my recollection is that so they had traditional Korean items available. I don't recall seeing these on a posted menu. It's possible right. They were posted somewhere and I just wasn't paying attention, but they're definitely posted now, or the last time I went, which would be at least 2 years ago. But yeah, to my knowledge, it was not posted at the time, but it was something that if you were in the know, you could come in and order. So I started talking to whoever was behind the counter. Originally, it was usually Phil or his wife, but then eventually there were younger folks who were somehow connected, like knew the story.
Right.
That I would talk to. And yeah, they had, like, you could get little trays of kimchi. The soup that I had seen was kimchi jjigae. So it was like a kimchi soup with pork belly and tofu. It boils just because the soup is really hot, but then the stone bowl that it's put in is like at oven temperatures. And so yeah,
hot oven temperatures.
Yeah. So it's able to keep the soup bubbling away.
How do you even eat that? Just kidding.
Very carefully. And they had, yeah, pork dumplings and fish dumplings. And the green bottle was soju. So like Korean, sometimes it's rice distillate. Sometimes I think it's wheat or barley or something. But it's just a fairly neutral spirit. I think the one that they carry at Steel Wheels is maybe 15 or 20%. So it's not that strong.
Crazy.
And so... My friends and I started cautiously ordering some of these items, and like our default order became bulgogi pizza and one side of kimchi and one side of kimchi jjigae and one plate of rice and kokini or something.
Right.
Oh, sorry, and a bottle of soju to be shared. We were starting to develop this kind of ritual. But then what put it over the top was when I was in culinary school, there was a Korean student in my class named Alex. And I
thought for sure you were going to say Alan. I was like, oh my God, it's a match made in heaven. Anyway, sorry, go on.
And I cannot for the life of me remember how this transpired, if he had been there and offered to go with me, or if I had just told him about it and I actually have no idea, but somehow he and I ended up at Steel Wheels one night. And he told me some of the traditions and like rituals involved with, eating and drinking, in Korea. And so the one that really stuck with my group. So first of all, I'm gonna ruin this now. Say when you're drinking the soju, you say kompai, like that's their cheers.
Mm-hmm.
But you always, like, he taught us how to hold our, like, you hold the cup in your right hand and you kind of hold your right hand with your left hand when you say that. And there was something about paying honor to the oldest person at the table. And now I can't remember if it was the oldest person doesn't have to lift his glass or doesn't have to hold his hand or something like that. I've fallen out of practice, but whatever the ritual was, we continued it for years to come in our consumption of the soju.
Sweet. And so, and these are still like late night situations, hey? Like you're...
Yeah, there was one point where like it had become so, it was such a regular and important part of our sojourns, our weekend sojourns on White, where we said we should really come here for supper one night when we're sober, just to like, because we like it and it's fun and it might be nice.
Yeah.
So we did do that once or twice as well, but by and large, we're talking about this is the end of a late night. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's got to be when it's best, hey? Especially if you're going to order the bulgogi pizza.
Yeah, like we kind of hinted at this in the guilty pleasures. Like the pizza is not anything to write home about. It's but at that time of night, it works.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
But the kimchi jjigae, for instance, is fantastic. And
do they have pancakes on the menu? I'm a big fan of a lot of Korean pancakes.
Like I don't know. Not that I remember. No.
Hmm. There's a few kinds. There's like usually some kind of kimchi pancake, mm-hmm. and then there's usually some kind of seafood pancake.
Mm-hmm. Is it kind of?
Yeah.
Is the pancake a little bit omelet-ish or no?
Yeah, it's pretty eggy.
Yeah,
and it's got a lot of inclusions. It's mostly just like stuff that's held together with like an eggy kind of pancake batter.
Okay.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite Korean things to eat as pancakes. Mm-hmm. I'm in love with it. So, are they open? Like, are they open for lunch?
So again, this information is years old, but back in the day that I'm talking about, they were open 4 p.m. to 4 a.m. every day.
Gotcha. 4 p.m. to 4 a.m.
Yeah.
Do you think they made most of their money at the end of the night off of drunk students? Is that like their bread and butter?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. They had,
yeah.
I mean, their prices were like, that was another reason that I think it really played well to the young crowd. Like the prices until the very last days that I was going there, like it was a bottle of beer was $3 and a really generous slice of pizza was $3. Like it was like a quarter of a pizza.
Right.
It was $3. But I imagine that they didn't do a lot of business between 4 and 8. That later in the evening, they on the weekends, they consistently had lineups out the door.
And you say that like Phil was usually pretty friendly and pretty happy to be working behind the counter. I just like, I'm trying to picture in my head, like what that would be like if you're, you know, if you're making most of your money off of like drunk students who are coming in and spilling their food all over the floor, like every day of your life, whether that would be soul crushing or whether you could like think it was the best thing ever. I don't know.
He was, almost impossibly chipper and friendly. And a lot of the regulars, he was kind of a legend. Like the regulars loved talking to him and had a respect for the place, I think, for the most part.
Right.
But yeah, just because of the scene and the time of day, there would be some, I don't know what to call it, some bad blood between diners and people who had gone a little too far stopped respecting the space and everything. But it wasn't usually directed at the owners.
Right. And the owners were never like trying to haul drunk people out into the street because they were being rowdy or.
Well, I mean, to operate a place like that, I'm sure it must have happened, but.
Occurred. Yeah. But it wasn't like happening all the time or whatever. They had a pretty good way of dealing with it or whatever. Yeah. I just, you know, like I wonder if like, I'm super curious, and I guess it's like impossible to know. And like, and since I've never been there, I have no, like absolutely no idea about it, but I just wonder if like when they opened it, I guess they thought, I guess if it's called Steel Wheels Pizzeria, I guess they were opening it as a pizza joint and probably hoping to get some of that late night crowd. Mm-hmm. I mean, seems like that must have been part of the plan, but
yeah. And if I remember right, so like I described it as being kind of a dark lit street at this point, but maybe oh god, maybe 20 years ago, there was a nightclub on that street called the Armory. So I think that maybe.
Right. So it's kind of like right across the street from where the Armory was.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's
Right. Okay.
So it could have been that street had a lot more activity on it. Sorry, I'm dating myself, but yeah, 15 or 20 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. Yeah. I never went to that place and I never went down that street, but it was full of drunk people probably right around the time when they opened their restaurant.
Yeah.
So
yeah, actually I have no idea how long Steel Wheels has been around or if they were the original owners, or I actually have no idea.
You're gonna take me there, right?
Oh, yeah, I have to.
Yeah, when are we gonna do that? I'm not trying to put you on the spot. I'm just saying, like, we should think about it.
Oh, yeah. And, oh, I don't even like having this conversation anymore, but, like, yeah, if it weren't for the pandemic, I would say this weekend.
We should go tomorrow.
Right. But it's not okay. Open right now, right? Or I don't, like, you can't,
oh,
like, there's
yeah,
no dine-in.
I guess it's probably, yeah.
I wouldn't want to just get takeout from there. Because they don't let you take the stone bowls.
Yeah,
so.
No, neither would I. That would not be the experience. And they don't let you take the graffiti.
Yeah, exactly. So just keep being safe and smart, and we'll get there as soon as we can.
Okay, fine, Alan. I have my one vaccination. Mm-hmm. Do you have your one vaccination yet?
No.
Are you going to have it soon?
As soon as I can, yep.
I have mine because of special circumstances. Mm-hmm. So yeah, right now, between the two of us, we have one out of four vaccinations that we need. So yeah. We'll keep counting up the vaccinations as they occur. And then once we're maxinated, then we'll plan our steel wheels.
Did you just make that up?
No, I stole it, but I love it. I'm trying to make it happen. Yeah.
Yes, I will.
Once we're vaccinated, yep. Then I'm sure by then there will be dine-in at a lot of restaurants.
Yeah.
Because, yeah. And so hopefully shortly after that, we can go to Steel Wheels. You can
show you the ways.
Yeah. Okay. You can teach me all the things. All right. Well, I can't wait now. Sort of desperately dying for Korean food now.
Can you just whip some up?
Not really. I mean,
still have kimchi?
Yeah, certain things. What's
you
that?
Still have kimchi?
I still have a little bit, yeah. I guess I could go to the Korean grocer tomorrow, pick up a couple things. It's hard, though. Like, a lot of the Korean food that I like is very starchy. Mm-hmm. And I recently found out that I have type 2 diabetes,
yeah.
So I've been really trying to change my diet,
yeah.
So that I can make myself into a healthy person.
Right.
And so, yeah, there's a lot of tempting things that I can't really do anymore.
There must be lots of...
Like, I don't know if I talked about it on the podcast before, but I kind of, like, right before, like, sort of in the time frame that we started recording, and then, like, a little while before I found out about my diabetes, I was, like, getting really into making Korean fried chicken at home.
Oh, I don't know if we talked about that.
Oh, yeah. It was becoming a thing. Mm-hmm. Like, I was... You know, maybe once every couple weeks, and I was trying out different recipes and trying out different batters and like trying batters from recipes that I found online, and then also buying, like, because you can, they at the Korean grocer, they have like a few different kinds of like pre-made batter mixes and stuff.
Oh, is that right? So, okay.
Yeah. So I was trying to up my Korean fried chicken game. But now I'm off the fried chicken train. So,
but there must be lots of good like som, like good like lettuce wrap kind of stuff that you can still have, like pork belly and lettuce wrap, and
definitely. And I can still have all that stuff. Yeah. I just have to, like, for the most part, omit the rice part of the meal. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I can have lots of the condiments and pickles and and the well marinated meats, bulgogi, and. Oh man, short ribs. It's like one of my all-time favorite things to have, Korean short ribs. Maybe that's what I'll do, Alan. That's how I'll take care of my hankering. I'll have some of your kimchi and I'll
braise some short
ribs. Make some short ribs, yeah.
Right now?
I'll go to the Korean. No.
Oh.
Maybe tomorrow. It's too late right now. It's 10 p.m.
Can you really briefly tell me the secret to good dredging on Korean fried chicken?
To be honest with you, I don't know if I entirely got there, but the method that I was most often using was you make a batter, and so you use the same mix that you you make a batter, and it's like about 1:1 water to dry.
Okay.
I think. Does that make sense? Yeah, I think so. And then so you make a batter, and so then you have still some of the dry ingredients that you used to make the batter. Mm-hmm. And so you pat the chicken dry with a paper towel, mm-hmm. and then you dredge it in the dry ingredients, and then you dredge it in the wet batter,
yeah.
and then you take it out, let it sit for like a minute on a rack so that some of the batter drips off, mm-hmm. and then you re-dredge it in the dry. That's what I was doing.
Oh, okay.
And that was working pretty well, mm-hmm. like as far as getting the batter to adhere and having like a really good coating. Mm-hmm. And then, I don't know, frying chicken at home is kind of like a weird, it's sort of tough to get it right.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, like even if you have a fairly big pot, trying to keep it hot on like a residential stove, which I don't have a gas stove at home, which is sad, but also is just the way things are. Right. And so trying to keep the oil hot enough was kind of tough. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I was sort of like, that was the part that I was kind of like, you know, working up to getting right. Mm-hmm. But sometimes some of the pieces would come out a little dark. Most of the time though, like even if I fried them for a long time at a slightly lower temperature, they tended not to get like super greasy, which was good. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I had some pretty good success with it. I had some pretty good fried chicken.
Cool.
Well, I think we're just about ready to wrap up. I don't know. Like I feel kind of bad because we called this episode something about hidden gems. I don't know. Maybe that won't be the actual title when we post it. But I can't really necessarily think of a better title.
Yeah.
But I just feel like we've left a lot of hidden gems on the table. You know, yeah. like we've talked about two sort of hidden gems and there are so many more.
Yeah. And the first...
I guess we just have to come back and do another hidden gems episode at some point or whatever.
Yeah. And like I said, I had some reservations about calling mine a hidden gem in the first place, but it had the hidden element yeah. that I thought made it appropriate, but...
It is somewhat hidden too. Like if you compare it to every other restaurant that's in the sort of White Ave neighborhood, like it's kind of out of the way.
Yeah, there's not like the White Ave scene does tend to creep south of White Ave. Well,
yeah, but not north all that much, you know.
Just on like on Calgary Trail, it like that's where you have Meat and Next Act and stuff, but
right.
certainly more than a block north of White, there's not much happening after dark.
Yeah, and it's like three blocks off White or something, hey?
Yeah, like, two or three, yeah.
Okay, well, listeners, if you have hidden gems that you're like, oh my God, they're talking about hidden gems and they didn't talk about nyamanya, well, please write in.
Nyamanya?
Blah, blah, blah? I don't know. Whatever it's called. If we didn't talk about your hidden gem, write in and excoriate us for it. And then when we do the real hidden gems episode, we'll talk about all the hidden gems.
Right.
Like Noodle Feast.
That's a good one. Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. That's like a whole episode.
I almost feel like it's not hidden anymore because it was in a publication and now I can't remember if it was Edify or Avenue or.
Oh, really?
I'll look into it, but I think the word's getting out.
Oh man. Well, I mean, right now it's closed and it's been closed for months and months and months. Like they basically, as far as I'm aware, they closed during the first lockdown of COVID and they haven't been open all year.
Even for takeout?
As far as I'm aware.
Like
yeah.
literally yesterday I saw a friend post that they were there.
Oh my God, really?
For takeout. Yeah.
Okay. Well, either I'm wrong. Because they had a sign up on their door for a long time. The last time I actually went and looked at the door was, I think, in December.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the last time I actually went and checked was in December. Okay. But every time I kind of drive by and I do some driving around on the south side. Mm-hmm. So I kind of like drive by it. And so I sort of like try to, you know, Hawkeye and see if it's like, if the sign is still like posted.
Mm-hmm.
I can kind of see it from the road if you know where the sign
yeah.
is. And so, yeah, I was under the impression that they were still like fully closed, but yeah, if they're open for takeout, that's great news. I was super scared that they were going to be like closed
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
not reopen after COVID or something. That was like one of my most dire Edmonton restaurant scene fears was that Noodle Feast was not going to reopen.
I thought you were going to say one of your direst COVID era anxieties or something. And I was like, wow.
It is one of my direst COVID era anxieties. That Noodle Feast would not reopen. So yeah, that's great news. I'll do a little bit of research tonight and maybe I'll be able to alleviate my anxiety. Sweet. Well, nice talking to you, Alan. I hope you have a great evening.
Thank you. You too, Shale.
Yeah.
Bye. Scene.
And scene.
Thanks for listening to Food Court, a podcast recorded in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. Food Court is hosted by Alan Sutterby and Shale McDonald. Theme music by Ryan and Shale McDonald. Make sure to subscribe to Food Court in Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, or in your favorite podcast player. We love to hear from our listeners. Please drop us a line at feedback@foodcourt.fm or find us on Instagram at Food Court Podcast. If you want to spread the word, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. We'll be back in 2 weeks with a fresh new episode. Thanks for listening.